If you're taking time out from the election coverage, have you noticed President Obama's taste for innovation? It's well known. He holds festivals like his own mini South by Southwest on the White House lawn. There was the unlikely ticket this week of Leo DiCaprio and Obama talking about climate change. DiCaprio mentioning he's heading to Mars, for real, not the sequel to a Matt Damon movie. Could Obama pull off a full-fledged Burning Man festival on the White House lawn between now and January? We can only hope. We've been teaming up with our partners at PRI and WGBH's Innovation Hub to look at how the next president might shift gears or extend the innovation legacy of the Obama years. As part of it, we talked to U.S. Chief Technology Officer Megan Smith. Today, we check in with the host of Innovation Hub, Kara Miller, to find out what she's been hearing.
One of the things that came up quite a bit was the issue of manufacturing, which has obviously been a real hot topic in the campaign. And it's certainly a complicated story. There is a future for manufacturing in the U.S., but most people will tell you, when they're being really honest, when they've had the truth serum, that, you know, this is not going to be a place where we can compete with countries that pay a tenth or a 20th as much to their workers. Here's Catherine Rampell from the Washington Post.
It's a really challenging problem, and it's easier to say, oh, we're just going to bring their jobs back, or we're just going to retrain them. It sounds more hopeful coming from a politician to say, oh, yeah, those jobs are just coming back, except that they're not. It's a cruel promise, I think, to make.
So the idea that jobs that left are not coming back, that's something to focus on, even though the manufacturing sector is actually growing. It's just growing in new jobs.
There's talk about, oh, gee, our jobs, you know, moved away to China and moved away to Mexico. And to some degree, there is truth to that. I mean, millions of people came in from the countryside in China to take factory jobs. But I'll tell you something that is never discussed, which is that China itself is looking over the next several years to automate hundreds of thousands of manufacturing jobs. So we may soon be able to say, yes, those jobs went to China, but neither Americans are doing them, nor Chinese people are doing them, because soon robots will be doing many of them.
What sorts of challenges in education to keep up with this transformation have people been talking to you about?
So I have to say, education is one of those things where somehow, you know, no matter what CEO you start talking to or what venture capitalist or whoever, an academic, you almost inevitably end up at the education system. And I have to say, if you think about every debate you've heard, every candidate forum, every candidate interview, how many questions have you heard anybody asked about elementary school education? Or about high school education? I mean, you think, what is more important than a country educating young people? And I don't know that I've heard more than like one or two questions. I've heard a little bit about college, but it's really not about education in college. It's really about college financing. And I would say that the people I talk to are really concerned. Here's Andrew McAfee from MIT, who puts it in very stark terms.
Our primary educational system is set up to turn out people with pretty good basic skills, the three R's, but I think more fundamentally, people who get trained to sit in one place in a grid, in an orderly grid all day, and have a voice of authority kind of inflict subjects upon them. That might have been the right thing to do in an era when we needed tons of assembly line workers and payroll clerks. We don't need those kinds of workers now.
So he's talking about a real change in the education system and primary education, as well as STEM subjects in college.
That's right. That's right. And it is interesting, too, because there is so much talk about STEM, and STEM is important. But you talk to many people, even people who are deep into technology, and they'll tell you, learning programming right now in 2016 that you hope is going to help you, you know, 30 years down the road is only mildly important. I mean, if you think about how different technology was 30 years ago, learning technology now to help you in 30 years, that's okay. But really learning how to solve problems and be a creative thinker, that's really a lot more helpful, because it's impossible to predict what the world is going to look like 30 years from now. So learning an approach is probably a far better thing, which was what Andrew McAfee was getting to.
One of the challenges for the president is going to be to go kind of jumpstart the original ethos of Silicon Valley, something that we like to point to as the American success story.
jumpstarting Silicon Valley was not something I expected to come across. But I talked to Roger McNamee, who is sort of a venture capitalist legend in the Valley. And what he said was that the early pioneers in tech, so you go back to the 1960s and Intel starting up in the Valley, were not in it for the same reasons that today's tech leaders are in it. Here's what Roger McNamee said.
There was a generation of people participating here whose first motivation was to change the world. And the number of people out here is just a lot more than it was before. And at the margin, the vast majority of them are coming out here with their primary desire being to get rich. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't think it's consistent with producing the kind of really exciting, wonderful, society-changing benefits that this community has produced every once in a while over the last 50 years.
So getting rich may sound exciting, but it has a kind of conservatism that comes along with it that's inconsistent with innovation.
When you want to get rich, you make very different kinds of decisions than if all you want to do is sort of change the world or try a crazy experiment. You tend to color within the lines because, after all, you want to make sure you get your Christmas bonus. You want to make sure you get that next promotion. And if that's what you want, you're not going to necessarily take the kind of big risks that, of course, could result in the big failures that would make you lose your job or, you know, never be able to get another job or that kind of thing. So it is interesting that the ethos has kind of shifted. So part of the role of the next president will be to refill the pipeline with really creative risk-taking types because some of that seems to have gone out of the Valley a bit.
Personal question. Do you mind?
Okay, go for it.
Are you one of these change-the-world types, or are you a get-rich type?
I'm trying to change the world and just get rich on the side.
Kara Miller, host of PRI and WGBH's
you know.
Innovation Hub. Check out thetakeaway.org, where you can find a list of five innovation challenges that will face our future president, no matter who he or she is. Kara, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks.
Good to talk to you, too.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.